Hello, hello, hello out there in podcast land. You have reached Johnny Has the Keys, where we talk about horror movies and science fiction films and those key elements that help lift them above the average genre fare. If you're joining us for the first time, we would like to welcome you. I'm not sure how you found us, but we are out there on many different platforms. So welcome, welcome, and we hope you like what you hear or see. If you're returning, well, welcome back. We're glad to have you too. We appreciate your comments and your suggestions, and we want you to keep them coming because sometimes we run out of ideas. Very rarely, but we do. My name is Tim. I am here with my friend and co-podcast partner, David Horton. David, how are you doing today?
I'm okay. You know, whenever you do the intro, I kind of start feeling like Teller from Penn and Teller. I'm nodding and I'm animated and everything, but I'm not saying anything.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm trying to, you know, do it for the YouTube like you told me.
That's hilarious. I have met Penn, by the way, in Washington, D.C., and he is gigantic. It's like meeting Andre the Giant. He is a very big man. Well,
I got to work with them twice on two different corporate events, and they're both very unique, very interesting. Yeah. What have I been doing? I actually have something I wanted to try today to surprise you with, because if you are new to Johnny Has the Keys, you don't know that Tim and I, we don't rehearse or script or do any of this ahead of time. This is just all blind to each of us because we want to get our honest reactions to it. Sort of thing, whatever the topic is. We like to start with, what have you been doing your genre week? Well, naturally, I have been still going on my cinephiles guys, listening to their podcast. And, you know, they mostly do classic movies. So they'll do Lawrence of Arabia or Bridge on the River Kwai, Godfather, you know, that sort of thing. But they've occasionally delved into horror movies. So I thought, that's what we do. Let's see what we'll do, you know. And it's very interesting because I just listened, and, you know, this is a little bit off topic, but I just listened to Wrath of Khan because they did Wrath of Khan. And they mentioned, you know, this was before you could buy your tickets online and you couldn't do it. You had to get at the theater like 6 hours before the movie and stand in line. And this guy goes, and I was, and he said it exactly, whatever the date was. And I don't recall.
Something in 82. You know, like, summer of 82.
But he said, he said like June 17th, 1982 at 6:05 p.m. I was number two in line. And that motherfucker in front of me deserves to die.
That's hilarious.
Because he had been in line He goes, I left there immediately after school to get in line. And that fucker beat me. But I thought I'd listen to some of their podcasts. So one of the ones I listened to for horror was The Thing, which happened to be officially the first movie we ever covered on Johnny.
Yeah, it was our second episode.
Mm-hmm. Second episode we did. And I was amazed at how just wrong they were about so many
things. Oh my God, that's sacrilegious.
They were right, but they were making the wrong assumptions, if that makes sense. So they had a lot of the production stuff down. You know, they knew Rob Bottin. They knew it was his first big, you know, movie sort of thing. They knew Stan Winston had done a couple of, you know, a lot of the stuff that we covered when we did the podcast and the research that we had done. And they talked about, you know, the original novella.
Who goes there?
The performances. They really both really like Kurt Russell like we do. So they talked about that a lot and how just that one scene with him and the torch and the dynamite when he's frozen and he's shivering and he's going, you know, just the way that's done and da, da, da. But anyway, it spurred me to say, okay, so this week when I talk to Tim, I'm going to ask some of the questions that they, in my opinion, either got wrong or didn't have the answer to. And I don't know if, I can't remember if we did the answers on the podcast or not, but I thought it might be cool. So The Thing, John Carpenter.
1982. Also.
Yes, correct. And actually, what, a week after E.T.?
Something like that. Yeah. And Blade Runner was in there somewhere, too. Yeah.
Well, because they mentioned it, and we mentioned it, too, that part of the reason that this movie didn't do so well is because on the other side of the cinema, you had the nice alien who just wanted to go home. And now in this one, you got the alien that wants to take over
everybody. Well, you had sci-fi sweet and sci-fi horror, and then you had sci-fi in the middle with Blade Runner. I can't remember how they all came out, but roughly the same time. And it kind of diluted, E.T. diluted both of them, really. Yeah.
Yep. So, and it's only like four or five questions, but I wanted to get your take on it. So, remember the scene where Blair has the gun and the axe, and he is shooting at everybody and everything else before they trank him, right? Was he the alien at that time?
I don't think so.
Okay. See, they were adamant that he was and he was faking. And I went, no.
He got, the totally alien disagree. Got him when he was isolated.
That's what I think. That before he went to the shed, he was human.
I mean, because he was hilarious. And that's one of Steve Roy's favorite scenes when he's just cussing, God damn it, and just swinging that axe and just going nuts.
I want to kill you.
And Windows is over the corner, cowering.
He wants to get out. You know, and when he's trashing the helicopter, this guy on the cinephile said, well, the reason he trashes the helicopter is to have parts to build the alien spaceship. And I went, no, that is totally not correct. He, in my opinion, no, he did not do that. He was still human and was trying to keep the alien from getting away, in my opinion.
Right.
Okay, so you agree with that. So, moving on, question two. Did Norris, you know, because Norris, the very famous scene with the defibrillator and everything else, obviously, he was an alien. Right. Did he know? Was that all a ploy in order to attack everybody? Or was the alien taken aback by the heart attack or the physical condition?
I think the alien was taken back by the physical condition. I'm pretty sure Norris was the shadow we see when the dog walks into the room and you just see the silhouette.
Mm-hmm. And, well, that's my next question,
later,
which is
when he's on the table having the heart attack. I think that that's just something the alien's not used to, or he thinks that he's being attacked when the doctor's trying to defibrillate him.
Yeah, I've always since the first time I saw it in 82, I've always interpreted it as the alien took him over but didn't realize that his body had
a defect.
This condition.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And then I kind of disagree. I think the shadow is Palmer. I think from then on, the most of the movie, Palmer is
okay.
Alien.
It could be the shadow looked heavier set to me. That's why I said Norris. Hmm. But okay,
interesting.
I could see that. I mean, it's
always thought even.
It's one of those Hitchcockian, you know, flares that you're not really supposed to know who it is, but we just speculate.
And perfectly done. Yes, yes. Okay, almost through. So one of the things that they said I thought was interesting was, do you think Blair was building the spaceship by himself, or could Norris and Benning have been helping him? And I thought, that kind of explains, because I remember us talking about the fact that, because, you know, even MacReady says, Blair's been busy down here, you know, kind of thing, because, I mean, that's a huge freaking thing to have built in a day or 2 days.
It's a little bit the suspension of disbelief. I agree, and I had not really ever considered that, but it's I would have to watch the movie again to see when and where they die to know the timeline, but it's possible that they could have helped him. I think.
And then the last question that was raised by them that I thought was pretty interesting is, do you think the movie is an indictment on AIDS? And I thought, wow, it was 82. I hadn't thought of that.
No.
But the fact that this is something that's unknown, we don't know how to stop it, it keeps growing and it kills people.
No, I don't think it's I don't think that the information was available yet, because that was too early. I mean, even Rock Hudson didn't come out with admitting it till 86. So back then it was still, I don't even know if AIDS, the word, existed yet. I mean, it was known as like a gay cancer. That's what a lot of people referred to it. Okay. I mean, it may have existed then, but it wasn't as prominent in 82. And you know, they didn't film it in 82. They probably filmed it in 80 or 81. So I just don't think that the time works with that at all. But I mean, I could see where you could say it's a metaphor now in a way. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Now you can look back in retrospect. But it was very interesting because they are very similar to you and I in so many ways when they're talking about a film and the way they
you
do it.
You need to tell them that they need to listen to the beginning of this one then so they can hear us talking about them.
And the way they, you know, just their experiences, they're obviously very similar in age to us. You know, they talk about the same kind of things of, you know, rushing to get that VHS copy as soon as it came out at the store because you hadn't seen the movie since it was in the theater and you had to see it again kind of thing. Or that was your first turn on to the movie was through VHS, never in a theater.
Right. Well, and I was just talking, a few weeks ago about waiting in the lobby to get into the second showing of Creepshow and hearing everybody screaming at the end of that movie. And we're like, what the fuck is going on at the end of this movie that everybody's freaking out?
Right.
Yeah. That's great.
What about you? So that was my genre.
Well, you're going to laugh and be astounded when I tell you, because we're yet again on the same wavelength. I have been watching a show that I told you was not very good as far as the format. It's a little too fast and a little too funny. But I decided to watch these because they're covering several of the same movies that we have covered. And the show is called The Movies That Made Us. It is on Netflix. They don't always get the main people.
I've seen that.
They don't always have the right information, but I watched this. This season, they've had a lot of horrors, and I've watched Halloween, Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, and Aliens, and they are all movies that we have covered.
Yep.
So I was like,
done every one of those.
Yeah, it was awesome. Like I said, I wish they were a little more serious and a little less pop culture-y, tongue-in-cheek with their information.
Yeah, because they did. I remember watching the first season. They had Gump. Didn't they do Forrest Gump?
Yeah, and like Raiders
and
maybe
they
or
did,
something.
No, they did the one I don't like, Dirty Dancing.
Ugh.
And Back to the Future.
Yeah.
I think was their first season. And I watched them all, and they're very, I mean, you kind of said it best in the text. It's kind of like a, what was it? Not a VH1, but it was
like
a,
that pop-up video they used to do on VH1.
Wasn't it? Or the other one that was like a, what was it? It was like a documentary show, like, but very tongue-in-cheek in the writing. They try to tell jokes in the video.
The
edits.
Editing's too fast.
You know, the way they do stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They move on before you've had time to really resonate with what they've said. And I don't like that.
Right.
Maybe it's because I speak slow sometimes. I don't know. The first episode that I watched was the Halloween one. So they did not have Jamie Lee Curtis or John Carpenter, but they did have Nick Castle and Mustafa Kod. And I was like, okay, well, that's interesting to hear Mustafa's information about this movie and how he got into the business and wanted to do a horror movie. You know, he was the producer, but he started off as like a distributor.
Yep.
And that all that stuff was fascinating. I watched Friday the 13th, and Sean Cunningham is on there, and he said, yes, we were out to rip Halloween off. We knew it made a ton of money, and we wanted to make a ton of money. They basically got – I mean, it's got information that we didn't have, which I love because I'm like, I didn't know that. I wish I'd have known that. Like, they got shut down and didn't think they were going to finish the movie because they ran out of money and stuff.
Yep.
That kind of stuff that you love to hear, but you don't often know about. And then I watched the Nightmare on Elm Street one, which did have Heather and did have Robert Englund. Yeah, it did not have Wes Craven, of course, because he's dead. But some of the people that were in these other ones are dead now. So I don't know when some of these interviews are probably lifted from past interviews. And then the one that just blew me away the most, I watched last night, and it was Aliens. And I mean, they went over all that stuff we were talking about with the crew rebelling on James Cameron.
Oh, yeah. They did not like him.
No, but they went into more detail about it. Like, we knew there was an allegiance to Ridley Scott and them thinking of it being a British film, right. And Cameron, who was this crazy American that, you know, was taking over and didn't know what he was doing. Well,
and his girlfriend wife was the producer.
And she was known as, like, yeah. They called her the pixie with an axe. Because she took no shit. But anyway, they talked about that. And remember I told you that they had not seen Terminator. Well, it had been released in the States, but it had not been released in England. So nobody knew who he was or that he was capable. And basically, I don't remember us talking about this, but Sigourney Weaver is on this. They interview, oh man, the one with Aliens, they have everybody just about. They have Jeanette Goldstein, all the crew except for Bill Hudson, all the like military,
of course.
Except for Bill Hudson.
Yeah.
And
that's great. That's great.
It is great. And Sigourney, I can't remember who said it, but they said the reason the movie didn't implode after he fired that assistant director, because he said the assistant director was undermining him and he had to
get rid of him.
So he fired him, and he was very respected, and the crew rebelled. And they said the only way they got peace on that set was Sigourney. And she was the star. Really? She was friends with the crew. They knew her. She knew Ridley. And she had a meeting with Gale and Cameron. She gave a speech, made him give a speech, and made him apologize, and everything went smooth from then on out. Because they said that she was the piece they needed to settle everything and move forward. And then the movie just went fucking crazy because they made so much money. So she was right.
Did they talk about the whole tea time thing and the fact that he hated it and he cussed at the tea time lady
it.
And all that?
Hated it. Yeah. Yes. And they even talk about some little old lady that came in with the tea.
Yeah,
and
the tea cart lady.
And he
it's your tea.
Got all ugly with her. And one of the crew members was like, this poor woman has no idea what's going on. She's just here to bring tea. And he's yelling at her.
Yeah,
but they also had Roger Corman on there. It was old interviews, and he graduated from the school of Roger Corman. And Roger Corman was like, "It's time to make this movie work. We have to work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, because that's how you do a movie, and that's the mindset that James Cameron had going into this. And unions weren't having it. So
no, not in England." Not at all.
But it was cool.
What do you mean, lad?
And they even showed clips from Battle Beyond the Stars, the Corman version, or whatever, with John Boy. What's his name? Anyway, I know we've gone on and on way too long, but that is just so funny that you and I are on the same wavelength. You're doing it with podcast, and I'm doing it with TV.
Yeah, just trying to revisit the old stuff, because, I mean, that's why we do what... That's why we do this. Yeah. I mean, we love these genres and these movies, and there's so much history.
Well, I think you need to reach out to those guys and just, you know, say, hey. I mean, I think I put them in my podcast. I haven't listened to one yet. And because they should probably be listening to us too.
They've got like 206 episodes.
Holy shit. So. They're 100. They must have started a little bit before us.
Because, I mean, their con one, I think, dates to 2018.
Wow.
So they've been doing it a little bit longer.
How many do they do a year or a season?
That I don't know, because I don't see them as seasons. They just have them in order on the podcast.
Right.
Link.
Right.
You know, they don't divide theirs up. They're kind of like our other guys at 30 and Nerdy that, you know, you don't know what year, you just know the number.
Right.
Kind of thing.
Okay.
So.
Fascinating.
Give them look up a movie that you would like and see what they do. But maybe not one of your horror ones. Maybe it's something.
Oh, they're going to piss me off.
Because, because one of them, I can't remember his name. I think his name is Steve. But he says categorically he does not like horror movies. They scare him. They literally scare him. He does not like them. So when the other guy who loves horror movies forces them to do one like The Thing, the whole time he's going, man, this is scary as shit. Man, this is, I don't even want to watch. Why are we watching? This is scary.
Right. You
know, sort of thing. So, but yeah. So, and they, and like I said, they're mostly mainstream. They have a few science fiction, a few horror, but mostly it's mainstream movies that they do.
So we're not very competitive. That's cool.
No, not in that respect. Mm-hmm. Not at all. But we do horror and science fiction, which we should probably do now since people tuned in for it.
Okay. Sort of. Would you qualify this topic as science fiction?
This film today? It is science fiction, but it also scared me because it was it was so bizarre.
Well, it's also animated. Well, so I'm saying, would you classify it as sci-fi or would you classify it as animated? Or I guess both?
No. Well, you can have sci-fi animation.
Yeah, that's true.
You know? I mean, it's not the... You have horror animation, for that matter.
A little.
Look at...
vignettes in Creepshow.
Well, or look at the you know, the one that got me was... Heavy Metal, the one aboard the bomber, the B-52 bomber with the ghouls and everything attacking them and all
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I'm actually also remembering that that Train to Busan prequel was animated and it was good.
Yeah, you said it was animated. But before we get into opinions, so what we are covering today is a little gem, a very short film, actually. It's only an hour and 12 minutes. It's called Fantastic Planet. It was originally entitled La Planète Sauvage. It was made in 1973. It was directed by René Laroux.
Lalou. I love saying that.
Lalou. 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 Had three writers. Lalou, a partner of his called Roland Topar, and Stefan Wohl. The only person I recognized at all in this was Barry Bostwick, who was in the English translation version. He was the adult character.
Did you watch the English translation?
No.
I didn't either.
Well, yeah. I watched the French with subtitles.
I did too.
The original.
I did too. Because I was wondering if I would hear Barry Bostwick's voice speaking French. I wasn't sure.
Right. So from what I understand, he's only in the English version. So we didn't get him. So forget him. Think of him as Brad.
Well, I have something that you probably don't know that you will recognize that you didn't mention. But when you mentioned Roland Topor, the writer, one of the writers.
Yes.
Do you know where we've seen him recently?
Seen him recently?
Yes.
She was, wait, I've got in my notes. Hold on. Yes, I do. Hold on. I'll tell you. He was in Nosferatu.
Yes, the bad one with Klaus Kinski. Yeah. He played Renfield. Yeah. So he's an actor too.
Well,
yeah, that's subjective.
IMDb kind of phrases it best. They have a one-sentence synopsis of this movie, which is on a faraway planet where blue giants rule, oppressed humanoids rebel against their machine-like leaders. And that's the entire synopsis. I mean, there's a little bit more to it. You are basically following the life of this one guy. Terror is his name, which is probably French for something, but I don't know.
I was thinking terrestrial. I don't know.
Probably they call him Terror for he is a
because he is close to the earth.
But he is a baby in the opening scene and basically grows, and you find out at the very end that they named the actual colony after him or whatever. But he goes through this oppressive life of being a pet. And then running away and joining people of his own kind, but then he doesn't fit in with them either. And then he does end up helping them, eventually leads them. They go to a distant satellite of the planet. And there they find out the big secret of the blue giants. And that results in them, you know, basically forming their own colony, sort of thing. Had you seen this movie before?
I've never seen this movie before. I didn't even know it existed. And I want to know what kind of hippie ass, drug laden propaganda mumbo jumbo it was. Because, I mean, the whole time I was watching it, I was like, I feel like I'm on LSD. This movie is out there.
Definitely. This is Yellow Submarine if done by, you know, Pierre Boulez or whatever. You know, it was just, it was, I had never seen it either, I must admit. I had always heard about it. I had heard, oh, science fiction from the 70s, it's Fantastic Planet, you got to watch it. It's one of a kind. It's so unique. It's so different. I was like 10 minutes into this. That's my first watch look, was like 10 minutes into it. I went, oh my God, how did we pick this?
I was movie? Well, I, it was one of those times where I was like rapid fire texting you. What is this shit? But I was laughing the whole time. I was like, the music is like a cross between Dario Argento's like 70s giallo and Pink Floyd.
Very,
like very early Pink yes. Floyd. It, I mean, at least Yellow Submarine had Beatles music in it, so it had that going for it.
True. So true. Yeah, it was, I don't think it was an easy watch. It was definitely an effort for me. I don't know if we had not agreed that we were going to do it on the podcast, I don't know if I'd have finished it.
He is punishing me for all those foreign films I've made him watch.
All those
he is punishing.
Oh,
me.
And I was doing this other. I was doing the same thing on the other side. I was going, yeah, here's a freaking foreign movie. Show you see what foreign
like,
movies are like.
A Korean zombie you. Movie. He gives me French animation.
French animation. And I'm sure, you know, some of our listeners or watchers out there maybe love this movie. I would love personally for you to tell me why or what you like about it. What was your initial reaction? What was your reaction? Other than, oh my God, this is trippy as hell.
I thought the very opening scene was very brutal for animation. It's almost like seeing a kid pick the wings off a fly or do something like a magnifying glass with an ant. And it's just a kid flicking this woman with her baby. And then the woman ends up dying. And the kid keeps the baby as a pet.
Well, trivia point, this was the first PG-rated animated movie ever in history. Mm. So... And part of it is, yeah, it's kind of brutal in places.
It was kind of brutal. But I was like, okay, that is kind of a good science fiction motif where humans are the pets of another race. And then, but then it just started going off into these weird places. And I was like, I don't know. It kind of lost me. I mean, I watched it, but I was like, why did that box eat that guy and sink into the ground? And what was the there was like this cotton candy looking thing that was spitting. It was either spitting stuff out.
It was just dripping.
Huh?
It was just dripping.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, what is that?
Yeah.
It was really weird stuff. I sound like Carson.
I'm sure. For good stuff, we can talk about the thematics under it and the themes I think that they try to discuss in it, which I think is good. But the thing that really threw me off was, A, the animation style. Mm-hmm. I'm not really big on this French style that's very flat feeling.
Oh, I've got it. I mean, almost, there's a huge key in it. It's
very South Park-y to
me. I think it's very Terry Gilliam from Monty Python.
It's very Terry Gilliam, yes. But it's very, very flat and long, long, long pacing issues that I had where it would like suddenly just show a close-up of somebody's eyes. And you're supposed to get an emotion, I guess.
And then they would just turn a different color, and you're like.
And they would just turn a different color, and then it would just cut, and you go, what? What was I supposed to
do? I'm telling you, these were hippies that made this movie.
Oh, by far. These people had hallucinogens in their system somewhere at one point. Yes. And there were other things. Like you said, you know, it would show an egg and the egg would crack open and there would be a little creature in there, some weird looking creature. And all of a sudden another creature comes up and licks it And it goes, oh, yeah, and it turns its back, and the other creature licks it, and you think, oh, that's its mom. And then suddenly the creature eats it. And you
I know, and that's what reminded me of Terry Gilliam, except most of them weren't funny. You know, Terry Gilliam stuff is funny. This stuff was just weird and not funny.
It was weird. There was a lot of nature, though, in this. As far as if you talked about, let's try to do this with live action or even with modern animation, and it's world building, there's a tremendous amount of world building in this. It may be weird and goofy and like Dr. Seuss on acid, but it's very unique. You see a lot of life. You hear the sound effects all the way through this of nature and weirdness and birds and things, you know, and stuff. So there's a lot of audio work mm-hmm. in the movie. But it was so bizarre.
It is. And I don't have a hell of a lot of notes on it because even IMDb didn't have a lot to call from.
Well, it won an award at Cannes, so I think people have to say, well, you know, it won an award at Cannes, so it must be good.
Well, not only
I think Cannes awarded it because it's a French animation.
It's also, if you want to go to awards already, it's also on the 1001 movies you must see
what
before
the?
You die.
It is not.
It is.
There is no way.
No, I swear
That's
to God.
That's insane. There are at least, I think, two or three movies that we've covered that weren't on that list that should kick this little
That's exactly
off.
What went through my head when I read it. I was like, oh, wait a minute. No, this should have been on there, not that.
Definitely not that. Yeah. No. I mean.
And it won. It was a special award. It doesn't say what the award was. And it was a nominee for the Palme d'Or, which I think is Film of the Year.
Yeah, it is.
René Laloux.
But I cannot justify this as like even good storytelling. It does have the thematics. I mean, I do, you know, in my notes, I like the fact that they're trying to talk about racism and dictatorships and fear and propaganda and hate and, you know, all these themes are in there, but there is no character change. Not one character changes in the film other than Tyr, who does grow up, but he doesn't, you know, as a hero's journey, he doesn't reach some point and have some revelation and change out of it or something. He's just doing his thing. None of the blue giants change. You know, they say they should. Oh, you know, half of them are going to just kill all the Ohms, and the other half are going, no, we need to protect the Ohms. Or, you know, just let them go. Who cares? And then in the little narration at the end, it says, and they lived happily ever after, or what the hell ever. But you don't see that. You know, there's no emotional catharsis, I think, other than shock value at times. So
why do they get in those little bubbles and float up to the other planet and then land on the naked bodies and start having sex? Because they can't consummate. They have to use statuary to consummate? I didn't get that at all.
Well, the impression I got from it was because Tyr's animation that's doing it, or narration. And he says they found out their secret. They meditate so that they could join with other races. From other planets.
Headless statuary races?
Well, no. You notice that the blue head came down on one statue, and then the red head came down on the other statue. And then they had their libidinous practice. That's what he called it, libidinous practices. Instead of, they screwed.
Okay, I'm going to use
or
that.
Or whatever.
Libidinous practices.
So I didn't understand. So I'm with you. I don't think I fully grasped their concept for that. Nor the fact that suddenly the Ohms have this piercing laser that can destroy the statuary. So I'm not, you know, and that's really the climax of the movie. That's what we're supposedly building to.
Yeah.
And I went, and I felt, you know, it's chorus line. And I felt nothing, you know, it was just, there was nothing there.
Chorus line reference.
At first I thought something would happen between him and her, you know, the girl that kind of pseudo saved him.
Okay.
With the Ohms.
Yeah, the one that told him that she was wearing a fake collar.
Right. And they would end up, they're going to end up becoming, you know, a couple and, you know, creating the breed of Ohms that will rebel or whatever, like Conquest of the Planet of the Apes or something. But it didn't happen.
No.
You know,
do you think they got a PG rating because of the old lady with the baggy tits that was running around?
They were not just baggy. They were pointed.
And I was like, yeah, maybe that's why they got a PG, because it was animated nudity. Because I didn't really understand why it would be PG rated other than that.
Well, in several points, it was full frontal animated nudity, male and female.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Know? Yeah.
So that's probably why. It's definitely adult themed, I think, in a lot
of it. Yeah, because sex does play a part in it. Yeah.
The very beginning.
Psychedelic the sex.
Psychedelic sex. Ooh, that should be that's going to be my new band name. Yeah. No, but, you know, at the very beginning, like you said, the blue giant actually tears the mother's clothes off.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
And then just like in a weird, one of my keys is just a weird twisted kind of Logan's Run is they all seem to have like one breast exposed. That seems to be just a thing that we're going to do for our society.
Yeah.
We're going to leave one breast exposed. It's just like in Logan's Run, they're all going to be wearing the most chiffon-y shortest skirts or dresses that we
can. Well, and you know, I didn't even put Logan's Run in my keys because I don't have hardly any keys. I've never seen anything like this. But in Logan's Run, they kept track of them with the device in their palm. In this, they have those collars. So that's very similar to Logan's Run, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you had to have Yellow Submarine. That's a huge
key. Oh, yeah, I did. I mean, because of the animation. So Yellow Submarine. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've got pacing, symbolism, themes, sound effects. And that's it.
I'm glad that our intro went long because I was like, we're not going to have a lot to talk about with this movie. And I was like, I'd much rather talk about Halloween and The Thing or Aliens.
Well, I do think the design elements were unique. Some of the creature designs were just bizarre. Yeah. And, you know, to your point, it would be interesting to see a Rob Bottin or somebody like that try to do this practically. Ooh. You know, that would be neat because, you know, he did do such bizarre, strange creations and being able to see that. This is one that I kept thinking while I was watching it, would this work as a remake at all? And I don't think it would. I still don't think the story is strong enough or unique enough. I mean, I only have like two other keys. My biggest key is a little book that you've read, I know, because you love the movie so much, but
that sounds facetious.
It's called Monkey Planet.
Oh, Planet of the Apes.
Which was the inspiration for Planet of the Apes.
Why do you say Monkey Planet instead of Planet of the Apes? Because you're referring to are you referring to the movie?
The book. Yeah. The book.
I have not read the book. That's why I'm asking. Is it more like the book?
It's a very dystopian French technology is evil sort of
that makes a lot of sense.
And there's a lot, there's the feel of that in this because that book was 62, 63?
Funny that you mention it, but I have it right here.
And you've never read it, but you've got it?
It's written by Pierre Boulle, and I just have never read it. This is an old paperback I have of it.
In the novel, they have airplanes and helicopters and technology and cars and all that. It's not like they did in the movie.
1963.
So, yeah, that's what I thought, 62 or 63. So this would have been 10 years earlier that he wrote that. And then 10 years later, you know, Lalou. Was obviously influenced by it, in my opinion. I mean, that's a direct key to me because it just
I mean, that makes like sense that. Because both of them are French and both of them are science fiction. So
yeah, and your pets rebel against you in this kind of
and you know what, that is a strong, you know what, that you could actually put Planet of the Apes in there for that too, because they are treated like pets in that movie. I was going to ask you, because I can't think of it off the top of my head, but there's got to be a movie. I want to say it's like Choo Choo Bang Bang, but that's not it. Where adults are kept as pets by children. And I keep wanting to see Dick Van Dyke, but that's not it. I know that's not it. And it's not Incredible Shrinking Man. But however, no. They do actually, don't they give him a dollhouse to live in? I think they do.
Yeah. Remember, because the tarantula is what scares him out.
Right. So it is, Incredible Shrinking Man would be another then. That would be.
Yeah. And of course, it was like every other week on Land of the Giants was that, where they would keep them in a cage or in a aquarium or box.
I was thinking more, though, of like the child terrorizing the, you know what I'm saying? Like at the beginning when it seems like I've seen
remember,
that somewhere else.
Remember Twilight Zone, the Twilight Zone episode that starts out and they're kind of, all these characters are kind of all trapped and they don't know why they're trapped and they keep trying to get out of the enclosure that they're in and they end up finally like getting on each other's shoulders and, you know, getting up to the edge of it, da, 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 and it turns out at the very end that it's a toy box and they're all dolls. And
okay.
The kids looking down, the little girls looking down at them and everything. But that whole adults being played with by children kind of concept. That's a cool. There must be a movie that.
It's not that important, but that's a motif that I see in this or an element that strikes me as something I've seen before as far as a key.
Yeah.
Because I don't have a lot of keys. Like I said, I've never seen anything like this movie before.
I've got one last trivia thing, which is this movie took 5 years to make.
I know. I was like, really?
And I'm thinking, it took you five. I'm sorry. They shot Halloween in 30 days or something, you know, and you can do.
And these, took you five the animation years. Has no emotion. So there's not even like little facial movement. So what was so hard about it?
And remembering it is a, you know, so it is a foreign film. I don't relate well to foreign films usually. And so I kept trying to, you know, prejudge myself saying, is this just your own lack of being able to understand foreign movies? Or is there some French cultural dynamic of animation that is like this or blah, 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 or whatever? And I was like you. I was going, I have never, ever seen anything.
It's
like
mushrooms.
This. Nothing.
Yeah.
It's mushrooms, dude. It's mushrooms. It's bad window
pane.
It's
peyote.
Is what it is. Yeah.
It's why Jim Morrison went to Paris.
Okay, so my last key then I actually got from IMDb. It wasn't me. It was, I stole it. But there is a movie, and we should add it to our list, I really think, called The Cell. Have you ever seen that one with Jennifer Lopez?
I think I did, but I don't remember it. I want to say that came out
in the 90s,
didn't it?
Yes. And she basically plays a person who can go into somebody's dreams, and they put her into the dream of the mind of a serial killer. And she's trying to hunt him down and find out where his last victim is because he's unconscious.
I don't remember any of it if I did see it.
It's very surrealistic and very incredible costume design, incredible photography. The guy that...
Does she wear like really ornate costumes in it?
Extremely
ornate.
That's
what I thought.
Crazy headdresses. Yeah.
That's what I remember of it.
Wild. Yeah, the costume design, I think, was nominated for an Oscar. But there's a section in it where she is watching something on television. And much like in Halloween, they're watching The Thing, da-da-da. In this, she is watching Fantastic Planet.
Okay. I wonder who directed The Cell and what his relation is.
That would be... I can look that up really quick because that is one we should add to our list just because it is a really... unique. It was made in 2000, it says.
Okay.
Came out in 2000. It IMDb says it's directed by Tarsim Singh. He seems Indian, and he did...
Is it an American production?
It seems to be. Okay. I think so. He seemed to do a lot of... he's done some Bollywood stuff, and he's done a lot of... Anyway, Jennifer Lopez, Vince Vaughn, Vincent D'Onofrio is the villain in it.
Is it sci-fi?
I would consider it science fiction.
Okay, because I don't think it's horror.
No, it's definitely science fiction.
Okay.
Yep. But.
well, I put it in there.
So there you go. We survived a fantastic planet. You have any closing or final thoughts on that thing?
I want to tell you something else about aliens that I saw last night. they had film footage. You may have seen it, of the original prototype mother alien. They called it the Black Garbage Bag Monster.
Oh, the garbage bag.
Yeah, and it showed how two people fit in that thing and could make it move and stuff. Have you seen that?
Yeah,
I was blown away. I was like, I've never seen that before.
I knew the trivia that the special effects team that did that show actually
they won an award. It was four guys.
But they ended up splitting and forming like two different companies.
Oh, yeah. I think they did. I think you're right.
Two different special effects companies. Yeah. But yeah, because they were doing a lot of that at the same time. And they were having to bluff Cameron because they were telling him they could do it. And they really had no idea how to do it. So they were experimenting. And finally, it worked. Well, and you know.
They show another scene where, well, Jeanette Goldstein is prominent in this. She's being interviewed a lot in it. And she said when they had those crazy giant weapons they had to carry, did you know what those were?
Oh, yeah. Those are Steadicams.
They were Steadicams, and they just mounted like this giant gun on them. And then when they went to put them on her and her friend, who she's still friends with, and he's in the piece too. He's being interviewed too. The guy that... I think he gets acid
splashed. Gets scarred.
On. Yeah.
Yeah, gets scarred. Yeah.
They're the ones that have to carry those things. And when they wouldn't work, when they wouldn't mount, James Cameron just goes, gaffer tape. And she said they had to be taped into these things every day. And that the most popular phrase was, have you gone to the bathroom yet? Because you couldn't go to the bathroom once they did it.
Oh, after you're in the harness. Yeah, yeah, that would make sense. Yeah,
I'm telling you, I wish I had seen it before we did the broadcast because there was a lot of stuff in it that I didn't recognize. I was like, that is great, especially the stuff Sigourney talks about.
And so this is this is the movies that made us, and it's on Netflix.
It's Aliens,
right?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Okay.
But we're talking about a French film called Fantastic Planet.
Yeah, yeah. Were we? Oh, okay. Yeah.
So I guess in conclusion.
I mean, this falls into, and I think we've only had one or two other ones in the history of the podcast, but this falls into those of, I probably wouldn't recommend you watch this movie. I don't see a reason or a value that you would get from watching this movie.
No. Honestly. No, I don't understand why it's held in such high esteem.
There are better animated movies. There's better dystopian movies. There's better, technology-threatened revolt and revolution movies.
Logan's Run is more entertaining. And that's not
Yeah, and it's not good either.
Right. That's what I'm saying. I would rather watch Logan's Run again than this.
I agree with you. I agree with you. But at least we can... say we still covered something that's 1,000 and what? Really? I cannot. I'm going to have to look
that
up.
Telling
Are you,
you
sure?
Well, that, I mean, I got that from, I didn't look it up on the actual list, but it came from IMDb, which is where I get most of them. So.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. And there was something not long ago that wasn't on there. And I was like, really? I mean, I can't remember what it was. It might have been The Birds or something like that. But I don't know.
Yeah. There was one of those we did recently, like within the past five that we both went, what?
Yeah.
It's not on the 1,000?
Right. Right.
here we are.
Here we are. And we would like to thank you for listening to us today. Even though somewhat of a loss for words with this French film. And I'm not trying to sound racist at all because I'm the one that usually advocates us watching foreign films. You know this.
Correct. Correct.
Some good, some bad. Always. So, I mean, we just stumbled upon a bad one. Or not a bad one, but one that we just didn't appreciate, I guess. If you're joining us for the first time, thank you. Be sure and tell your friends about us, and we'll have a more entertaining film for you next time.
Oh, yeah.
If you're watching us on YouTube, you can hit that subscribe button down at the bottom. And ring that bell. We would appreciate it. It's a small gesture on your part, but it means volumes to us. We also have a couple of Patreon shows that are subscription-based only if you're into the original Star Trek show or the X-Files. But we also have a lot of free bonus stuff on there as well if you just want to go check it out. And, David, I think that will do it for today. What do you say?
It will. It will. We'll see you guys next time.
All right. Take care.
You too.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to Johnny Has the Keys. You can learn more about us at our website, johnnyhasthekeys.com, and our Facebook page. Avoid missing shows by subscribing on iTunes and Google Play, and please, please like, rate, and review us. We're doing this for genre geeks like ourselves, and we can't continue without your support. See you next show, and don't lose your keys.